Right. So, Kyle's here.
Hey, isn't Kyle.
He? Isn't he, Christopher?
Yeah, he's here, right in front
he's
of us.
He's here. There's a Canadian man here. I'm a British man. Oh, I just said I'm a so British much. Man.
Wow, you really did just to betray your Scotsman heritage.
That's getting cut straight out.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's great. We have this like international coalition here. We've got America, which doesn't really count. We've got Canada, and then we've got the UK, and it's just beautiful. You know, the colors of the rainbow.
Yeah, three white guys. Brilliant.
Yeah.
So, Kyle, what have you been up to?
You know, just trying to survive, basically. Not go absolutely insane.
Good.
Kind of the usual, really, you know, navigate the waters of pursuing photography as a passion and a career, and yeah, trying not to quit, trying to stay motivated. You know?
You're pretty much
my life over the past 12 years, essentially.
Your levels of boredom clearly surpass normality when you actually decided to come and visit me for a day. If that's how, you know, that's when people are phenomenally bored.
Yeah, the one and only trip out there.
How far are you guys from each other? Pretty close, right?
Yeah. Like an hour, under an hour.
See, it's funny. That seems like that's pretty close. I have this view of the UK of being this humongous area.
It's tiny.
But in reality, it's
so
like,
small.
It's not as tall as California, apparently. And I've been to both ends of California. It's pretty long. So I just assumed it's like, holy crap, it's huge. But it's not really.
Oh, yeah. You can drive from Oxford, which is near London, to like the middle of the Highlands in Scotland in like 7 hours.
Yeah, that's cool.
It is cool. And it's funny because like for me, well, so yesterday, basically like I look at a map and I'm like picking spots out because I'm like, oh, 2.5, you know, 250 kilometers or something. Like that's not that bad. And then like my wife and like her family and stuff, they're like, where did you go today? You drove to Wales and back. You know what I mean? I'm like, for me back home, that'd be like going to get groceries or something.
But yesterday you literally drove to Wales and back.
Yeah. Which is, it was not a good idea. So this is, I don't learn lessons essentially. And like things will happen throughout my career. Like I'll do certain things and then I'll be like, wow, that didn't really work that well. I probably shouldn't do that again. And then I'll just go and do it again and be like, this is going to be a great idea. And then it doesn't work. So yesterday was an example. I drove to Wales and back, but like, I was like, oh, this will be great. Like I'll film a YouTube episode. Cause I'm trying to do YouTube weekly. I have been for a while now, but I'm just like, I never get ahead. So like, I've been doing it weekly, but I'm like literally editing it the like day of, scrambling to get it out. So,
oh my God. Yeah. So, that's my struggle too, man. It sucks.
this led to me making some tweaks actually. But yesterday I was like, I'll drive to Wales. I'll do like a photo trip. You know, like I want to go start making some work out there and explore a little bit. So I'll make an episode about that, knowing that in the past, one of my biggest struggles has been trying to film myself going to like make actual work. Especially when you're driving 500 kilometers in a day and trying to take photos as well, and then trying to film it and get angles and talk. So basically by like, I left here at four, I woke up at 4:30 AM left. And by like 2 PM, I was just like done. I gave up on my,
wow. You know,
I shot like 8 images. I drove so much. I was just exhausted. At one point I get sidetracked too. So I was driving through the Brecon Beacons, which is like an incredible area. And it has I think the highest peak in the Southern UK. It's a climb, like a walk you can do. So I stop there. And of course I'm like, oh, I got to do this. Like I'm here. So I do like half the hike. It's taking forever. I'm exhausted. I turn around. So anyways, it was just, yeah.
Is there actually going to be a video? After
no,
this?
There isn't. Cause I basically shot so much footage at the start, intros and like talking about what I'm doing. I had an amazing morning in this like this old mining town, met some people, was super like enthusiastic. But then like for the next 4 hours, I didn't find anything. I got super tired from that hike. And then it just like all went downhill. So
that's funny.
Yeah. It's, I don't have anything.
It's interesting because I've had to kind of like do the same thing where I had to learn from mistakes of like, okay, maybe take little bites instead of like big chunks, because like, you know, you have a great morning. You said you met some people and you're in this cool mining town. Like that's already sounds like an interesting video to me, but then totally. Like, you know, you push yourself farther to kind of get more content, and then you just end up being like totally run to the ground, and it's like, okay, I got lost somewhere. Where did I lose myself in this like scenario? Which is like
by the sounds of things on YouTube, though, you need to start pushing yourself more, because you had that guy hating on you yesterday for not doing enough.
I was going to actually bring that up and ask you about that, Kyle. I had a guy who commented on my video who said, less talking, more doing. And he wanted me to show more of the, like, I guess the work behind making the photos and, like, going out and shooting. Because, you know, some people have the opportunity to go out. You know, you do it, which is, I've been trying to think, like, oh, how does he do that? Because it looks like a lot of work. When I've done it, it's been a ton of work. You know, shooting yourself, talking to the camera, setting up shots, and then making work as you're filming, and then having to, like, you know, do that whole dance. It's really difficult, but people really love that. And I think there are some YouTubers who've set this precedent that if you're going to show work with a film that you've done or a project, whatever, that you're going to have B-roll of you doing that work, which I think is really cool that, you know, people do that. But then also a lot of the videos or a lot of the creators I've seen doing that, they have help. They have like people filming them. And so it's like for someone like me or like you, we do all of our stuff kind of solo. I mean, how do you even deal with that? Because I feel like, you know, a lot of people really want to see that, and I want to give my audience like what they want, but I also am doing this for myself. So it's kind of also like, well, you know what, guys, you either like it or you don't. So I don't know. What do you feel about that? How do you feel about, you know, having to make that work?
Honestly, the one thing that I've learned, and it's difficult, it's definitely like an ongoing challenge, is like, you got to do what like works for you and what you enjoy and what feels right. And I know that's so easy to say, because you can look at other people's stuff and like that example, people do enjoy that stuff. But like, so for me yesterday, that was a day of me trying to go and do that. And it didn't work. And that's not like the only time that's happened. That's happened a lot. So any of the stuff you've seen where I'm doing that, that's just me kind of getting lucky and it working somehow, or me pulling something together at the end. So that's kind of like, I'm still going to do that here and there, like approach it differently. But, you know, it's everyone just operates differently. And for some people, they can pull that off. Like there's some people who do a ton of that. There's one guy, in the UK, he's not a film photographer. Well, he actually does shoot a bit of film. Thomas Heaton, he's like a landscape photographer. All of his videos are like him going out and making work. And like I watch his stuff and I'm just like so impressed by his ability to make it work, essentially. But for me, it doesn't work often. So
it's weird because like I feel like if I don't get to that level, if I don't bring my work up to the level of like what other people are doing, I'm not as impressive or I'm not as captivating as those other creators. But and that's where it becomes a problem, you know?
I'd say the difference between you two beyond like the content is that Kyle's profession is video making and you were a DP and like that's what your background is in.
Yeah. Like the bulk of my career DPing and editing and running production on stuff and things was very like doc style skeleton crew run and gun making, like I certainly have experience making things work with situations that aren't great. So that has helped me. But like, I think what's important is like, especially nowadays where like YouTube is, even over the past couple of years, YouTube has become like exploded, especially in like the film photography. There's tons of people doing all this kind of stuff. And I think more than ever, like, the last thing you want to do is just look at what like other people are doing, like people who are having like really big success in terms of like growth, and then be like, that's what I got to do. That's like, that's what's working for them. And like, that's easier said than done, because if you're doing something on that platform.
We discussed this the other day on that like someone like Matt Day, who's just been consistent, solid, never like, you know, overly elaborate or stylized videos, is sort of just ticked away at or gradually increased his following. Whereas someone like Willem shows up and like skyrockets.
Well, and what we were kind of saying is like that you can't like, I think like I give props to anyone on there who's making content, but you can look at people's channels and like analyze what's worked and kind of take things here and there, but you can't look at it with this like wide view and be like, he's doing that. That's why this happened. Like, there's just, you know, people gravitate to certain individuals. There's different age brackets. Sometimes things just explode. There's so many factors that 100%, come into play.
Yeah.
And that's not to like totally diminish the hard work that like other people have put in and stuff. But I just think like everyone's scenario is different. But what happens so often is like people look at something that happened for someone and they go, that happened because of this. So I need to do that.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
like, it's just not, it's not that simple. You know, everyone's
it's way nuanced.
Yeah.
Which is the approach that you should take to photography as well. It's the same thing. Like, you can't, you know, you can magpie people's ideas here and there, but you need to stay true to yourself.
Totally.
Because people will gravitate to you or your work because of you or your eye. Like, it's not, no one wants to come and see, you know, Kyle McDougall fill a negative feedback video. Although I kind of would. I'd like to see you dressed like George, actually.
I think they'd pull it off.
Oh, you could.
No, for sure, though. And that's like, it, again, it's easier said than done, because I think, social media, you just look at what other people are doing and you can really kind of simplify things in your head, and it's not that easy. But I think, yeah, more than ever, you just got to do your thing and try not to get like too like analytical about what other people are doing and then sidetrack, because it can be easy to like... Like, let's say someone out there is putting out a video a week and their channel is exploding. And let's say you're putting out a video a week and your channel is growing slowly and gradually. Like, it can be super easy to be like, what? Why isn't mine going as good as theirs? My stuff's good too. Like, just get all crazy about things and like analyze stuff and essentially waste a whole bunch of your time.
Yeah. And, you know, not to be too inside baseball right off the bat in this podcast, but I had a thought that kind of actually goes across to, you know, photography or any kind of creating in general that is omnipresent kind of on social media. And I think that I run into this a lot as a YouTube creator, and I'm sure you do as well. You know, do you have a struggle with figuring out like what work that you do that takes up? And I mean, what percentage of the work that takes up, I guess, doing work for YouTube, doing this work specifically to show people and not necessarily stuff that you want to do versus like work that you feel like is work you really truly want to be doing? Because I feel like I can look at specific creators on YouTube or Instagram, you know, be it video, photos, whatever, and I can kind of tell like, okay, you shot this for Instagram, you shot this for YouTube, because, you know, it just kind of has that feeling like they just need to get something shot and throw it up there. But I feel like in a lot of your videos, mm-hmm. I'd say most of your videos, I can't see, I can never discern if there's any filler, because it seems like you're very intentional with the photography that you do. And that's not to, you know, butter you up. That's just to observe, like, I feel like I can look at my videos and be like, oh yeah, you can totally tell I took that photo just to get this photo. So, you know, how do you kind of discern how to deal with that? And what, if any, inspiration do you kind of like look to kind of keep you away from that? Because I know that a lot of people struggle with like shooting for social media versus shooting work that they actually want to do.
If you can manage to answer through the layers of butter.
Sorry.
That would be...
It's a croissant. It's a croissant.
No. Well, thank you. I think it's one of my struggles, to be honest, because like when I go out and I make stuff for YouTube, when I go out and I shoot photo, when I go out and just make photos, regardless if I'm making a video better or whatever, if I'm just creating work.
Correct.
Like,
thank you so much, Kyle.
Like, my mindset and my approach and everything is still the same.
Peace.
I'm just like, I want to find something that like attracts me and then I'll make a photo of it. And that is the struggle. That's what happened yesterday. You know, I'm like driving around forever. I'm not seeing anything and I didn't make anything. Just because I'm like, it wasn't because I was like, I can't shoot something less because it's not going to do as good. It was just like, I physically was not, visually was not attracted to anything and nothing excited me. And then I just couldn't make any images. So I think like, I guess my answer would be like, nothing really changes for me. Like when I go out to make images, I'm not going to shoot something unless like I see something that attracts me and I get excited about.
So there's an authenticity always to your video, because you could have made a video is what you're saying. You could have made a video yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I guess, you know, in hindsight, I could have just stopped in a town and said, okay. And this might not have been a bad idea, to be honest. Just said, I'm staying here. I have to get this video done and I'm just going to make some work. And maybe I won't like it as much, but it's getting out there. And this actually, so yesterday, basically for the last year, I've been all in on YouTube and my like photography online. So it's been a massive learning curve, how to navigate this and how to find a fit. But yesterday really was an eye opener for me to realizing that, okay, maybe I can't do this weekly. So for instance, I'm not putting a video out this Sunday. I'm going to switch to bi-weekly, because right now it's taking me 5 days a week, sometimes 6 days a week, to get a video out once a week. I'm neglecting all of these other things that I want to do. Like I'm trying to publish a book. I really want to do some like other business things with prints and courses. Like basically I have this list of things I want to do and none of them are getting done because all of my focus is going into making a YouTube video once a week. So yeah. After yesterday, I was like, I'm going to go to bi-weekly. And you know what? My channel's not going to grow as quick. I'm not going to get as much revenue. I don't know how that'll affect sponsors. I don't care. Because it's not like long-term, it's not going to work.
And it's just like people don't really realize unless they start doing YouTube. And I didn't even realize this until maybe like a year into me doing it. It's like, it's an incredible amount of work. And at the pace that most people are putting out content, it's like incredible that these people have the kind of time and focus to get to those videos. It's just an immense amount of work. And especially if you don't have, you know, like a staff, my friend, Sam, mm-hmm. you know, Sam Elkins, he has good fortune to be able to pay for a videographer and editor. So he has someone who helps him film and also helps him edit. So that's taken a lot off of his plate, which, you know, and talking to him about it, he's like, oh, it's still like a full-time job. And it's like, how is it so much? And it's just like, you don't really realize till you get into the thick of it. I tried to do once a week. And now that I have a sponsor, I have to do one once a month on their schedule. But even that is like daunting, you know, it's so much work.
For sure. And I will say, once you kind of get into that platform and you start, you know, putting out content, it's natural that it's easy to, you see what everyone else is doing and quickly you can kind of get pulled into this thing where you're like, you're trying to keep up. And like for me, I kind of stopped and I'm like, I don't like, I love doing YouTube. I really enjoy the community. Super grateful for everyone that follows me, comments, all that kind of stuff. But like, I want it to be a thing, not the thing, you know what I mean? So like, I want it to be like a big thing in my kind of photography world, business, whatever you want to call it, but not like the only thing I do, because it's like, it's just, there's a lot of other things that are also important to me.
Well, I think that's another thing. There's a lot of young people that are doing YouTube now and have YouTube channels. They don't really have many responsibilities beyond that as well. Like, so you've got the pressures of being, you know, married, you've got a 2-year-old child, and then other work on top of that. But there's a lot of young people that are pumping out content and video and stuff because they don't really have, you know, other things going on.
For sure. And it all comes back to this. Everyone's different. I think that's really important to remember, because it's easy to forget at times. You know, you just look at someone else, what they're doing, you're like, I got to keep up. But, you know, everyone has different capabilities. Everyone has different like ways of working. Some people have help. People are different ages, people have families, like everyone's situation is different. So I think you got to really remember that and kind of, you know, adjust and tweak where necessary to kind of make your thing work the best it can for you.
And that kind of highlights the absurdity of comparing yourself to other people in anything, because you can't, nothing is one-to-one. Like me comparing my output to like Willem Verbeeks is stupid because he's a young kid. He's in his early 20s. He has, you know, his life is very different from mine. And he is in a situation where he gets to have the ability to kind of go out whenever he wants and make content and shoot all this cool stuff. I don't have the same ability to do so because like I'm an old fart.
You're lazy.
I have to like pay bills. Yeah, I'm lazy. I have to, you know, I have like a, you know,
job. The one thing I do want to say is like, I don't want to discount anyone who's like, I would never want to be like, it's working for them because they don't have many responsibilities and they don't have to worry.
Oh, it's not just
that. And I'm not saying that's what you're saying. Yeah. I guarantee anyone who's doing this full time and putting out a lot of content, it is a struggle and they go through all the same stuff. But I just think, there's circumstances. And then there is just also how you work and how people function and how their mind works and how, you know what I mean? Like I might do something and want to quit right away, you might be able to power through it just because like your brain functions different than me. And I, like, there's so many variables.
Well, you told me the other day, because I asked you, that most of the stuff that you're doing, talking to the camera and like out and about, is with your Blackmagic Pocket 4K. And I thought to myself, that camera, when I had it, was such a kind of a bear to use unless it was locked off on sticks and like I had a monitor and, you know, I was doing something very stationary. And thinking about you walking around with it, I was just like, what in the world? I can't do that. and so like, yeah,
not a good idea.
Not a great idea. I swear to God, I thought you're gonna say like, oh, the X-T4, because like, you know, that camera's so nimble.
That's compared. I'm using the X-T4 a lot now.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of what I was, yeah, what I was thinking.
Just
it's just easier
for all those reasons that you just mentioned. Yeah.
Is this, sorry to go off topic, is this digital cameras we're talking about here?
It is. We can expand, ooh, if you'd like.
Jesus. We start talking, yeah, about that's megapixels, enough inside baseball 4K. For
now, yeah.
Yeah, it's getting a bit ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that a little
bit. It is an interesting.
What? Oh, Mike, you're
digital cameras?
No, you're dropping out a little bit.
Am I?
I don't know. Is that just me, Kyle? Is he, are you hearing him fine? Because I
it no, yeah, yeah, it's good. It's all good on my end.
Oh no, yeah, it's probably me. Maybe my Wi-Fi sucks. Do I sound okay to you guys?
You're good.
Yeah, yeah, you sound fine.
Sorry, you said something, and I missed part of it.
I like the bit of Jeopardy that just came into this podcast, though. Just got exciting in here. Thought we were going to lose one of us. any of these four listeners that were losing interest,
we've roped them back. It's at least six.
We've roped them back in. No, my gran cancelled her subscription.
Oh, God. Great.
I was going to say, actually, the digital world is a nice segue into one of the things I really wanted to talk about, which was editing of photographs, of film photographs.
Mm.
And the reason I wanted to talk about it is because of something Christopher said the other day, which I took great offence to. Which was, Kyle, I know that you're quite open about, and you've done videos about your editing process, and I think that it's very important, I think, especially when you're the great deified ambassador of film photography that you are, to be open about these things. Don't smirk, Christopher. You know it's true. You've got, you should see, he's not going to show you his bedroom, but there is so many pictures of you in it. Not your photos, just pictures of you.
Well, look at that.
That's he actually does have one of your images, yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I was going to say...
It looks like a pixelated blue blob.
Oh, yeah, it does from here, to be honest, yeah.
Whenever
that's
I
all
have,
it is. He got one of yours printed out. Over.
Yeah, yeah, did you download really one off quality. Instagram and print
yeah,
it out?
Yeah. it's a screenshot that I had printed. I blew it up.
He's got one of those. He's got one of those really cheap photo books made, and he's got like a calendar made with your images and stuff as well, and a coaster.
I will say that...
And a keyring.
Unintended thing. I put it up and then I started filming my YouTube videos this way before I moved my stuff over there. And I didn't put it up for that, but because that was up there, people were like, oh, sick Kyle McDougal print.
No.
I got all this like all this ancillary like clout from it. So thank you for that. But
not once has he ever worn it on Locktop though on there.
Yeah, oh, not on the tube. No, I have worn it in Milwaukee where it was cold.
Obviously, it was weird. We had so many people buying stuff from Milwaukee. It was our...
Yeah, we do.
It's vintage now.
Yeah, it is. That's it. We're defunct. Christopher said that you've got to stand by this now. On editing film stocks, you can edit any film stock to look like another film stock, and you were all right with that. And I said that was blasphemous.
Sorry, let me qualify this really quick.
Hang on, you said that you can do that?
I said that's let me qualify it because
don't backtrack
statement
now.
Like that. So
I can't
I
hear you
said,
from the grave that you've dug yourself.
What I had said was you can pretty much is operative there, edit any film stock in post to approximate any other film stock. And what I was basically saying was that people put so much weight on using a specific film stock for a specific look, but people then and then they'll state things like, for instance, with Portra, Portra has this crazy latitude, like it's the best film, but I never see anyone using that latitude and then pushing that film really hard in post to kind of like get everything out of it, like to get a different look or to like really, I don't know, experiment. And then my point was like, you know what, I've edited Portra in such a way that I've gotten it to look very similar to Ektar, but obviously with that more exposure latitude of Portra, so I had more room to work with. Which is to say, what I said to Mike was very simplified, and there's a lot going on underneath that statement. So don't
that's nail me. The details are coming out now.
Yeah, but that's boring. Forget that. Just go with what you said and stick with it.
Okay, so just be controversial and take the hate, is what you're saying? I'll do that. I'll take the cross up on that. I'll just say that like,
that's why I only shoot with 1980s expired EGFA color. Because, you know,
you want the crushed edit,
put on, yeah, put on my Portra LUT in Lightroom and we're good to go.
Exactly. There's so much nuance there within reason.
But I think right. So one of the problems I have with like people talking about, you know, the various shades or colors or tones you get from certain film stocks is that so much of it is dependent on what your lab does with it. So yes. what tone you get back is you can send it to two different labs and get two entirely separate tones back from the same film stock.
Yes. That's true if you're sending it to a lab, which I am not. So,
but even
right,
even
so obviously, like, yeah.
Yeah, even like scanning film at home. Like, so one of the things that I've talked about a bunch, just for people to understand, because there are these like buzzwords, these things, like I've said them for sure, like, you know, they're used like back in the day in the 90s or late 2000s or early 2000s, there used to be like
last week there
used to be two types of Portra, right? Like you all know that, VC yep. and NC, right? Mm-hmm. So vivid contrast and neutral contrast, I think
it's color, right?
Vivid color, yes, sorry. Yeah. So and that, but that all came down to like printing in the darkroom, right? So if you think about it, because basically like, you know, people talk about Portra having, you know, softer tones, softer colors, stuff like that. Well, if you scan your Portra at home and you just start scanning and you have no idea what you're doing and you use like Epson or like some random preset, it could look like the most saturated thing you've ever seen in your life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and I even remember actually when I first got back into film, I can't remember where it was, but there was some website where they sent film off to like 10 different labs across the US. To get the same image scanned on the same scanner. And they showed how different it was between each lab.
I think that was Emulsive. I think I saw that too.
Yeah, very, very well could have been. So I think that's super important to understand. Like still, like for sure, like, you know, when I shoot Ektar and I scan it at home, it definitely has these like bluey magenta blacks. Like I find that is something that sticks with it. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like saturation and contrast and stuff like that, you know, that there's so much that goes on when you scan it and when you bring it into Lightroom, if you're using Epson scan, if you're using Silverfast, if you're using ViewScan, all this kind of stuff. I mean, film stocks still definitely have their own unique kind of signatures, but I think
100%
scanning at home, they're not as kind of stand out as they would have been if you were just say printing in the darker.
Yeah, right. I mean, there's definitely a difference in film stocks between, like, you know, you look at Pro 400H against Portra, like regardless of where you get them scanned, like
for sure,
they're going to look like you're going to know what you've got.
Yeah.
But I think that people, but especially when they start to get into this, like everything becomes overcomplicated. They hear buzzwords and they don't quite understand, or they overcomplicate it. They put it into like some sort of stratosphere of like importance or lack of understanding that it's not worth, like, you get really worked up about it.
That's why I say practice, like to anyone who's starting out. And then sometimes when I'll do like videos about like, you know, things, if you're starting out, I'm like, practice, like try out films, find the one you think you like. And then just like when I was first getting back into film, I was sending my stuff to the Fine Lab. It's when I was traveling in the States, and I would be like, can you scan this on the Frontier? And then can you also scan it on the Noritsu? And can you do another one on the Noritsu, but scan it at whatever your like low contrast? Like I was just like, I want to see a bunch of different ways that this could look, not because I want to waste my time, but I basically want to get to a point where I know it's like right now, you know, I scan at home on my cool scan. I was just scanning T-Max. I use Negative Lab Pro. I have my settings that I go, I want to do all the practice and tests and get them out of the way so I can get to a point where I'm like, this is what I use with this program and these settings to get this look, and that's what I like. And I just want to go and make, I just want to make work.
And that's where you're at, Christopher, isn't it? I mean, you do all your own stuff.
Yeah. Well, so, I mean, you know, the problem that I had with, you know, figuring out what film stock to use or whatever is like, in reality, I just need a film that's like, for what I'm shooting, is going to capture the information correctly and expose correctly and have the information on the negative so that when I scan it and bring it into Lightroom, I can get what I want out of it and then it looks good. And I found that no matter what film I'm using, I can either pump up the characteristics of that film in post to make that stand out and really look like that film, or I can like make it looks like something else just by like screwing with like saturation, contrast, you know, the shadows opening up or crushing the blacks, whatever. And so I scan everything as flat as humanly possible. And then I go in there and I apply a little contrast curve. I mess with the exposure. I futz with the saturation. And then from there, it's just like, you know, decision like, okay, do I want this to be brighter and more like impactful? Or do I want it to be more muted? Like, you know, it just kind of goes with like, I just want everything to be very, very simple. Because I used to be really, really into like, oh, this film stock is the one to have, or this, I have to shoot this for whatever reason. But then, you know, it just, whenever I went into it with super high expectations of what I'm supposed to expect, it never really worked out that way. You know, the nature of film.
Do you think that in making things super simple, like I hear that and then I think actually it sounds more complicated.
It is. It that's the funny thing. It kind of is, because I had to go through these hoops of like trying things and experimenting to like get to this place where I was like, I'm confident in what I'm doing and it works for me every time. You know, and then developing my film and digital next to each other pretty much exactly the same way. And it's really funny, Kyle, when you brought your, when you did your video on how you edit your digital photos, I felt so vindicated, because that's pretty much the same way I do it. And I always think, like, oh, when I'm editing stuff, like I'm doing it the wrong way, or I'm taking shortcuts, or I'm not doing it the professional way or whatever. But in reality, like, the tools are in front of you, the way you use them, that's like up to you. Like there's no like secret sauce for the professionals. It's just like what you like.
And usually what I've learned over the years, both like with filmmaking and photography, less is more. I think what happens is we all start out and we're like, there's this program and there's like a million sliders.
Oh yeah.
And I got to figure them out. And then we're jacking things and we're like, oh, I didn't do enough slider adjustments yet. And you like, you go,
it's like when you get into
more
HDR,
more.
when you first get into digital photography, you get into HDR and you're like, everything's layer, HDR.
Yeah. Stacking different exposures.
You're like, hey, I've just taken a picture of my kitchen and I'm going to make HDR. It looks super hyper real and cool.
Now, you know where it's at is doing HDR photos of gray cards. That's where it's at.
Oh no.
But it's funny now, because like I find myself doing less and less and less and less.
100%.
And I think that's maybe because my workflow is getting like a little more streamlined, but also it, like at the end of the day, it just comes down to your eye. Like, you know, getting like learning what looks good to your eyeballs on the screen. And it's gonna look different to all of us.
Because what I do when I've got film stock in, I won't, this goes to, I don't know if this is just me or me being weird, is that I'll see certain things and I'll be like, I want to take a picture of it, but because of the film stock I've got in, I'm like, it won't suit that. And I don't want to, like, I don't want to, I've got a, I don't know if there's a slight sort of purist thing in me that's like, I want to shoot things that are true to the film stock that I'm shooting in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's things that like would suit, like is an Ektar image in my head. I'll be like, that's an Ektar image, or that's you know, a portrait image, or like when it comes to portraits, I like the tones of like Fuji.
Like going for stuff that's like pastel colors because you're shooting portrait.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So like the new website that I'm putting up now, like I've barely touched any of those images, like in post. Or I'm finding that I go into post after and I do things, then I'm just like, nope. And I just take it all off pretty much.
Mm.
And then like, that's that as it is. But I always try and pick scenes based on the film stock I have in my camera, I think.
Yeah. Well, and I think in a way that's like for me now, like, so when I was doing color, I just shot portrait because I liked the color. And it's super flexible. So I knew that I'll use this. I know I can over and under expose it a certain amount. I know it's going to scan nice. And I know it's going to let me make it into what I want afterwards. Yeah. Now starting to shoot a lot of black and white here in the UK, I did all these kind of tests, same as when I got into color. And now T-Max 400 is what I like.
Yeah.
You know, because I can bring it in. I just converted some before we got on this call. It can be not super contrasty if you're scanning at home. But for the look I'm going for, it's perfect, but it's still flexible. So it's like now, like when I go out for a day yesterday and that's what I have loaded in my camera, I know, okay, this is going to allow me to just shoot the scenes, the landscape that, you know, I'm looking at in the UK here. And it's going to be flexible enough that I can make it look how I want afterwards. So I guess it all comes down to like what you shoot. Like for me, I'm going out and I'm basically I shoot kind of one thing. You know what I mean? Like in like landscape, I guess they're called like landscapes.
I would call it kind of like a riff on nude topographies. It's like very similar to
phrase.
I wanted to talk about it a little bit at some point because I think it's an interesting topic. But yeah, I don't know. I just kind of noticed that.
for sure. I guess I'm still, I would say, shooting the landscape, essentially. Although it's like, you know, towns are involved and things like that now, not just trees and lakes and stuff. But
I'm with Christopher. I would describe you as a landscape photographer as such.
Yeah, let's put that in the box right now.
Yes, let's do please. It.
Honestly, it would probably help me out.
I mean
the landscape as in like not like nature wilderness landscape, but like
in
front of your eyes type thing. It's funny because like I'll go into
Canadian
like
Canadian Stephen Shore.
Yeah. Oh, it's. I got that on my new business card I just made. You know, that one for sure.
That's the first drop of Stephen Shore in this podcast. Let's go for a couple more.
No, but let's pretend we never said that because I would never want to make that claim ever in my life. But
I mean, he will listen to this podcast
for
obviously.
Sure. For sure, you're gonna send it to him, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's listening live.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please welcome.
No, but I can't even remember really what I was talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
You were talking about how Portra is the number one only good film stock and everything else sucks.
Yes. Oh, okay. So back to that. Also do not want to get on that train.
Right. I think what it comes down to really, I mean, if you want to distill it, is like whatever you want to shoot, whatever's comfortable for you. I mean, you should just, I mean, I think I'm a big proponent of people just experimenting, which is why, you know, another thing about your videos, when I came across the first video I came across of yours was when you tried the exposure test for Portra.
That was me too. Was, first thing I saw.
Yeah. And that was a couple
of
years ago.
I can actually remember where I was when I saw it. That's how important it was in my life.
Groundbreaking.
I don't remember that. I think I was at home.
Guess we know who's the biggest fan.
Either way. First thing I thought was I was kicking myself because I was like, damn it, this is such a easy, I should have known this is such a good idea. This would have been easy to do. Why didn't I think to do this? Because like, brilliant, right? And then as you did more film stocks, I kind of was thinking like, you know, has that kind of approach to film photography, and I promise we'll get off film after this because Jesus Christ, but has this approach to film photography and kind of like being a little more scientific minded, I guess, which is my perception of what you're doing, has that kind of changed your perception or your viewpoint of how you approach film photography or like how you feel about it? Because, you know, we were kind of riffing on digital a second ago, but I feel like a lot of people just go off of like pure feeling and emotion when it comes to film photography, but it seems like you're very methodical and you're very like intentional with how you approach it. So has that given you a different kind of inspiration, or does that give you a whole different type of perspective to approach it? Because it's less nostalgia, it seems like, for you. But that's just, again, my perception. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah. I would say it's a little bit of both for sure. Like, don't get me wrong. The nostalgia part of it is huge for me when it comes to like, sometimes like I bought this is like a Zeiss Wira, like 30-pound camera. And I was just excited to use it, although I'm never going to use the images for anything. It's just fun to use like this old camera that like, you know, is strange and you never heard of. But that kind of stuff for me is just like purely me wanting to know what is happening, right? Like when I got back into film, like, so I went to, like years and years ago, like I went to college for film production basically and spent 2 years learning like motion picture film, shooting 16mm. And I was always like, the whole not being able to see what's happening when you're, you know, exposing and all that, it was always like in the back of my head, even though I was like confident in my abilities and stuff. So when I got back into film photography, all of that stuff, it was never like, because it's funny, like those things, like we called them scientific, but I'm always like, but they are like, they aren't, they're like the least scientific. I'm like, I'm just going to shoot, I'm going to go 6 over 3 under. And then of course there's people who always comment who know way more than me about like all the little details and nitty gritty. I'm like, I'm just going to overexpose, underexpose, and send it to a lab. Because that, when I go to work, is what I'm going to do. That's so I just need to know, that's the information I need to know, because I'm going to be sending my film to a lab. So all of that stuff for me was like, I just want to make sure I don't mess things up. Like when I go out to work, because I'm using film as a medium to create work that I'm like care about, that's important to me, I want to make sure I understand it as much as possible. So then it can just get out of the way and I can like make the photo of the thing in front of me and it can turn out.
Like that's, exactly.
Yeah. I've got a friend of mine that's sort of learning about like photography right now and like film photography particularly. And I said, the best thing you can do is learn everything so you know what to forget.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
Like, so you learn all this stuff to go, I don't need to care about any of that.
Mm.
But without the knowledge of knowing that thing, you don't know you don't need to care about it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's kind of like you have that idea that like you have all this knowledge that you, so you can do all this like crazy stuff. You know how to like push, pull, whatever, all this stuff. But if you never need to use it, having the, it's like the wisest man knows that he knows nothing kind of thing, like that kind of approach. Yeah, like
for
if
sure.
You know everything, or if you at least have this experience to be like, okay, I don't know everything about it, but I can try to know as much as I can, even though I'm only going to use a small little corner of it, it empowers you to kind of like free yourself of that extra stuff and just enjoy the creating part of it, which I think people kind of get caught up in.
Totally. And so when I got like over the past couple of months, as I got into black and white, which I'd never really shot, I was purely a color shooter. So I made some videos where I was just like, here's my experience getting into black and white film. And I'm basically, I'm trying films because I want to find the one. So T-Max, I want to find the one that is going to be my portrait, like my film stock that I work with. Mm-hmm. So I did a series of videos about it. And like, there was crazy amounts of like comments and feedback, like really cool people, like having huge discussions about black and white. But then there was also like, you got to do this and you got to do that and you have to try it this way and you got to do stand developing using rotinol and, you know, turn it upside down and stand on your head with it on your, like, just like,
totally,
like amazing, amazing information from people, but so much to the point where I'm just like, I want to do some things. Like if basically, if I shot one, if the first black and white film I picked up was T-Max and I sent it to a lab and like the scans I got back looked super good and excited me, I'd be like, done. You know, like that, like as soon as I like, but it took like four or five different films and now I'm developing it at home and I tried a couple of different developers, but now I'm like T-Max in DDX. And like, I'm sure there's all these other ways that people like, or that I could try. But right now I'm just like, I'm super happy with that to the point where like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to go and try rotinol on it or, you know, HC110 or whatever, like all these other developers, not because I don't think they're good, but just because like now I'm at this point where I'm really happy with this and it works and I just want to use it.
And I think all three of us actually are the same when it comes to cameras too. It's like, we've all gone like full circle with cameras, like trying all these different cameras. And then it comes back to like, this is good actually, because we're all Pentax 6.7 shooter. Well, you were a Pentax 6.7 shooter.
I've owned five bodies over. That's how finicky I am. I've owned, because they're such cool cameras, but then I'll butt up against the, you know, the limitations of them and things that I want to use it with, and then I'll just be like, ah crap, I can use this money I spent on this body for something else. Like I've owned like seven RB67 bodies. I still have two because that camera's like my ride or die medium format system. But the 6.7, Pentax 6.7, you know, it's hard to use with strobes. It's finicky as far as like mechanically keeping it like working properly.
Compared to the Mamiya, it's a dream.
Right. I mean, like having that one camera, or having those cameras that you know that you can pick up and just make work with and like not have to fiddle with it, that's just key, especially to me. I mean, that's how I feel.
You sold yours, didn't you? Your Pentax, Kyle.
Yeah.
And then you bought an RB.
Whoa.
An RB.
Wait a second. Yeah. You sold the 6.7-2?
Oh, yeah, but
back
guess
in
what?
The, back in the day. Yeah.
And guess who bought another one for obviously way cheaper?
Yeah. So I sold mine. I bought mine in 2017 when I was on the road. Mm-hmm. I think I paid like $2,000 for it off Craigslist in like, I was in like Nevada or something. And it
came
with a
bunch
of lenses. Like three or four and a bag of film.
Holy
moly.
It
was a sweet deal. And then I sold it and bought an RB. Because like I really liked it. I mean, I still feel the same way about it. But the RB was like really appealing to me as well. And I was just getting back into film. So like there were these exciting options. You know, I was like, oh, the RB looks really cool. The waist level finder, you know, the rotating back. And then I worked with the RB for a bit and it's a great camera, but I was just like the 6.72, it's what works for me. So I spent an extra $1,500 and bought another one. You know, it was great with less lenses and no bag of film.
I mean, the RB, like I love the RB. And I'm lucky enough to have both of like the RB and the Pentax. But like I got the RB, I don't know, a couple of months ago maybe. Shot with it. Loved shooting with it. Foam seals have gone. So I need to sort in that to get fit. Well, I mean, I can fix it myself, I suppose, but for time wise anyway, won't go into that. So then the other day I used the Pentax. In fact, when I was with you, I shot some pictures on the Pentax and then I finished that roll as well. And I was like, oh my God, this is so easy. I just click a shutter and I wind it on.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like, that's it. And then I'm done again. And like the amount of people that I say who like are interested in getting into medium format and they can shoot 35 mil. I'm like, if you want to get into it, like easy, get a Pentax. It's the same camera. It's just pretty bigger. Much.
Yeah. And you know what's funny for me is like when I used to do like landscape photography for like quite a long time in the beginning of my career, like my approach was like camera on tripod, waiting for the light. Might stand there for an hour waiting for that one moment, take like one image. So 4x5 really always appealed to me. And I mean, I have an Intrepid with lenses because I'm like, that's perfect. Like set it up on the tripod, really dial things in. And it's funny, since I've had it, I loved using it a couple times, but I'm starting to realize now like my method of working has changed. Like the thing I love about the Pentax, like I met this couple in this town in Wales yesterday and they were like, going somewhere, but I was like, can I shoot your portrait? And they were like, sure. So I was like, within a minute I shot their portrait. It didn't really turn out great, but I mean the fact that I didn't have to like set up my camera and like spend 20 minutes, you know, with a dark cloth and loading film and getting my loop out. Like I know tons of people work that way and there is appeal to
just realized you
that.
Said loop and not lube.
But for me right now, like that's what I enjoy about the Pentax is like just that portability and being able to walk around and handhold it essentially.
Yeah. And that's kind of why I ended up with it. So I had a Pentax 645N before, and then I got another one recently, and that's the same kind of thing. It's like my methodology, my workflow changed as well. Whereas, you know, I love the RB67, and there are definitely situations when I'm doing like product or a certain editorial stuff where it's locked off on sticks and I don't have to handhold it. It works really, really well. But when I do some kind of lifestyle stuff and I'm doing stuff for like web for brands or whatever, having that camera be a lot faster and automatically winding and I can burn through a roll of film, you know, really quick and I can like change the backs out and, you know, keep going. And how nimble the Pentax 645 is. It's just kind of like I realized like I can go from, you know, having this concept idea and to having a finished roll of film way quicker than if I'm using like the RB, which for certain situations, not all of them, it just is so much more appealing, you know. And not to mention that camera, you know, that glass is beautiful, and the whole shooting experience is just a whole different thing. And that's just kind of like just comes down to preference and like what you're doing, I guess.
The first video I ever saw of yours was your Pentax 6.7 review.
Mine?
Yeah.
I have to go.
That's 3 years ago or something.
Yeah, I feel like going back and like redoing or just like archiving a lot of those videos because Jesus, is my channel ever different? Like it's just, I don't know, Kyle, if you've seen some of my old stuff, but geez, it's I don't know.
I've been watching your channel for a while. Like we've been connected for quite a while, so I'm sure I've seen it all.
Yeah, and that's and it's funny because I've gone through stages. So your channel has been very consistent. Not to get back into more inside baseball, but your channel has been very consistent. You have a very kind of fleshed out style. And like if I see a video and if I don't even hear your voice yet, I'm like, oh, that's a Kyle McDougall video. Like you've got a good style going. Me, I've floundered all over the damn place for the last 4 years. And
no way, man. Yours is so recognizable.
I mean, I think I'm recognizable when I'm in the video, like when talking about stuff. But I feel like the thing is, I've kind of worn that as a badge of honor at this point, because I feel like a lot of what I've been doing with my work on Instagram for a long time and just with my presence as a creator in general to the public eye, I've tried to be really, really vulnerable and open about my my struggles as like a creator, because I feel like a lot of people do this thing where they try to put this facade forward where they're like, cool, cool person who like does this stuff and doesn't have any issues. And it's like really easy for them to make work, when in reality, behind the scenes, it's sweat and swearing and trying, and like everything's hard. And I've been trying to be really honest about that, because I think that at the end of the day, that's kind of my appeal to my specific audience, is that people feel like they really know me in a certain way.
100%. When the reason I really liked your channel straight away was because I was like, oh, look, it's a vulnerable 30-year-old hipster like me.
Oh, so that's why you were so familiar with me when we first started talking and hanging out, because you were like, you latched onto me. You were like, we're going to be friends. And I was like, dude, this Scotsman wants to be my friend a hell of bad. Like, cool.
Yeah. But I think, and now, and the tables, now the tables have turned.
Now the turntables. And I think like that's actually kind of cool, because I've met a lot of really people that I hold in really high esteem through kind of my YouTube channel. My friend and Christine, and you. My friend Christine, who is another YouTuber. She's like a lifestyle YouTuber who also does some film photography. We met through YouTube. She's actually the one who bullied me into making a channel, you know, connecting with you, Kyle, connecting with you, Mike. Like, having this little community has been like really interesting. And I think, you know, having that kind of weird, you know, esoteric kind of like floundering through the years has been kind of like, I don't know, my coming of age arc or something.
Dude, 100%. And that's like, that is important. And like, that's why, like, on my podcast, I talk so much about the creative process. Yeah. Like, mostly the creative process with people. Because the one thing I've realized is like, it is sloppy and it doesn't go away. Like, oh, I remember getting into, like, I had this like vision, or this like, I don't want to call it like a belief, but like when I was first starting out, I just thought like, oh, cool. Like in a couple of years, like I'm going to figure this stuff out and then it's just going to be perfect. You know, yeah. And then it's like 15 years later, all of the same like thoughts and struggles are still going through my head. And like finally, just recently, I'm like, this is how it is.
Like, this is the life.
20 years from now, it's going to be the same deal. Like, I'm sure I'll be a little more skilled, a little more fluid, like pick up some more stuff, but like, I'm still going to be struggling and all this other stuff. So
honestly, like, it's the beauty of it is you really do think going into it, like in a couple of years, I'm going to be a genius at this. And then I'm going to have this career. But in reality, you know, everyone is going through the same thing. And that's kind of the thing that can make you feel good about it, is you can realize that like, you're not alone in your weird struggle with trying to make work. Everyone's going through that same struggle, no matter where they are.
I think the thing that always gets me is how quickly you can progress and change, and your opinions and attitude can change. Like, I look at stuff that sometimes I've shot like a week ago and I'm like, this is totally insane.
Yeah, that's the story of my life, basically.
Yeah, dude, podcasting life is real.
It is. Big time.
I wanted to actually, really quick, while Mike's doing that, I do want to get to talking about some digital stuff, because I think it's funny that we were like, let's not go all crazy on video on you know, digital or film cameras, and we just went straight down a rabbit hole. But
obviously,
yeah. How do you feel? what's your kind of like basic philosophy? I mean, not philosophy. I don't know. How do you feel about the whole digital versus film thing? Because for me, I've gotten to a place where, you know, people will be like, you know, is film or digital better? And my default response is like, neither. They're tools. Like, just find what you want to use. And the same thing with people asking me like, what film camera should I get? It's just like, find a film camera that you think looks cool, and that when you hold it, you feel cool. And then that's the camera you should get, because that's the one that's totally going to make you want to make work. So yeah, I don't know. How do you feel about that? Being like he said, a deified film god at this point, how do you feel about the role of digital photography next to film photography as it is?
Don't be all Canadian and modest.
I don't accept that title, but
you accept it, and it's too bad.
Really? Because the poster in Christopher's room says otherwise.
Yeah. No. So, okay. I like, maybe it's because I'm getting older, but I start to like think about what I'm doing and like how much stuff actually matters sometimes. So maybe this is going to be like a weird answer to your question. But like when I first started out, I was like really specific, and like my like photography, my filmmaking was like so important, like, you know, these little specifics and stuff. And now I'm just like, okay, we're all on this like massive globe floating around in a universe. Like, there is some weird stuff going, like, our existence, and like, we're just these little tiny human beings on Earth, right? So like, I just find it weird sometimes when like we can really drill down on these little specific things that are parts of our lives and like set these like limitations and guidelines for them. So that's kind of a weird way to answer this question, but like at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter if you're using film. It doesn't matter if you're using digital. Like at the end of the day, you're making a thing that's in front of your eyeballs and it should look good to you. And if you need to like shoot it on like a one megapixel like a Kodak camera from 2001 and then print it or develop it and then print it in the dark, it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like whatever you want to do and whatever you want to use and whatever you want your image to look like at the end of the day should just be whatever like excites you and makes you happy. Like if that's film, if that's digital, if you want to like walk around with like a 4x5 cardboard cutout and like, you know, frame stuff up, like I think people should use whatever tool makes them happy and excites them. And I think that's important for everyone to kind of embrace. That's just my opinion. Cause I think as soon as you like start drilling down these limitations and stuff, I think that can just hurt the end product.
Totally.
And potentially make your work look like everyone else's.
Well, what's exciting you and what's kind of what right now is making you excited to create? Is there any one thing that you've come across or is there any one thing that's like really working for you recently?
Just honestly, the one thing that's been in my mind over the past couple months when I'm out shooting is just remembering to have fun. And I mentioned this to you, Mike, when we were hanging out a little bit, but I think you can get so caught up.
We hung out a lot, don't I?
Yeah, on like the projects or the image or your social media accounts or the book you want to make or the gig you want to land or the spot. Like you can get so caught up in all these things that you can go through these periods of time where you're just stressed out and you're burnt out. And all of a sudden this thing that you love doesn't become fun anymore. So honestly, for me right now, I've been through a lot of those periods through my career over and over again. So I'm just trying to like be conscious and aware. Like yesterday I went out, I had that ridiculous day in Wales, but like midpoint during the day I'm like, this is pretty awesome. Like there's this amazing landscape, I'm in this random town, I shot a photo, I met this couple, I talked to them. Like if this is all that I get from it, like
yeah,
good enough for me.
Yeah, man.
So that's where I'm at right now.
People lose that. I lose that all the time where it's like if I don't go out and finish something, you know, or if I can't figure out a way to finish a roll of film, or if I can't do, you know, whatever I felt like I wanted to do, that I failed. But like it's not really the point. The point is that like I get to do that. I get to try to do this and then fail.
I think part of the thing I think we all forget and we're all definitely capable of forgetting is that it is part it's enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
And not just the final product.
Super important. Because
that's what we do it for, you know. That's why you go out, and like that's why part of the reason I like using cameras that there's a process behind them, because it's enjoyable doing that, you know. It's enjoyable taking time to do X, Y, and Z before you press that shutter, and then you get the point afterwards as well. Like, and we're also impatient now, and we're so tuned in to being everything must be there now, ready, go. Like, I rarely finish a photograph, and I'm like, I'm already sending it to my phone to put it onto Instagram. And I'm like, the idea of putting together a project as like a book or an exhibition and not showing anybody before makes me uneasy.
Because you don't get that immediate feedback.
You don't get that immediate feedback. I don't get instantly like somebody going, cool photo, man. It's quite sad because I want to feel like I'm the opposite. But the reality is I'm not, and I think it's gonna take some real effort on my behalf, and I'm just talking about myself here, is that to stop doing that and to actually collate work behind the scenes and be content with me seeing it and nobody else seeing it until I want to show people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a work in progress for all of us, all of this stuff. You know, talking like it's easy to say like, oh, I just want to have fun now, but it doesn't mean I'm going to like, every day is going to be fun. I'm still going to be like, my latest picture didn't get enough likes, or all this, you know, crap that we pile on ourselves, right? Constantly. Yeah. But
and if you think about it too, like, you know, all the great artists in history, no matter what kind of art they were doing, you know, no one really cared about them until they died anyways. So I mean, everyone wants that instant gratification from Instagram or Twitter or whatever when it comes to their work. But I like to try to zoom out. What?
I was gonna say, are you trying to set up a suicide pact?
I would never want you guys to you guys will never die. Never die, okay? But no, what I'm basically saying is
I'm a Scottish alcoholic. I'm not going to I don't have much left in me,
hey,
to be honest.
Hey, you look much younger than your years, let me tell you. But
you should see me.
You know, the thing is I try to zoom out as much as I can and realize that like I'm kind of building a body of work that's going to be sort of like a legacy-esque thing, because it's going to end up being like, you know, my kids and my grandkids and whoever else are going to see all my work that I leave behind. And if it just inspires them or lets them think or gives them like a like, oh, grandpa was into this stupid bullshit that doesn't, it's not around anymore, like whatever, you know, whatever that is, like that instant gratification is really useless. Like it's that hit of serotonin, then it's gone. Like I never have a lasting high off of anything. Like I have Instagram posts that have gotten thousands of likes, and that was like really, really cool for like 2 minutes. And then later it's like, oh man, who gives a crap, you know? And that's not because that's not what it's for. But then I have people who ask me about getting a print of a photo that I made like 10 years ago. And I'm just like, oh my God, someone wants a print of this? That's insane. And thinking that like my work back then wasn't as good as now, but that's not the point. The point is I created something and it spoke to someone else. And that's what really matters.
100%.
Yeah, 100%. And I will just make one note. The one thing that I've started doing is like, whenever someone sends me like a message or something, like every now and then I'll get a message from someone saying like, you know, thanks for this video you put, like, or I was in a creative rut and it helped me like get out or whatever. I'll actually like screenshot those and save those now. Not, and I don't, that might sound kind of weird, but I like, I'm like, that is what's important. You know, that one message. If like, if I can put something out there that helps one person in that way, like that is like 10x, 100x worth more than all of these other little like, you know, ways that we measure ourselves. So
yeah.
And I think it's literally being in tune with that stuff.
Yeah. That's literally why I started my YouTube channel. And that's literally what keeps me going through the tough times, is realizing that, yeah, somebody out there saw it and it helped them in some little way. And that's literally all I can ask for. Everything else has been frosting on top of the cake, really.
Well, look at you two successful tossers.
Yep. Almost ready to retire, actually. You know, I think I got about another year of YouTube, and I think I'm going to be good to go to just shut her down for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
I might just nuke it any day now, to be honest.
Yeah. You guys flying, cycling off on your Skillshare bikes.
Yeah. Oh, Jesus.
Into the sun.
You know it.
Right. On that note, guys, I think we have ended on an incredibly positive note. Not the Skillshare bikes, but the sage wisdom of the three of us combined. The life-changing advice of the wisdom tripod.
Yeah, a bunch of struggling creatives sharing.
Yeah, and you know what? That's just a good. Yeah, and that's good. I'm glad that we can relate on that and that we can talk about that. So, Kyle, thank you.
Are we all good to call ourselves the Wisdom Tripod from now on?
No, man.
Yeah, I already updated my Instagram bio.
Sick,
if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah, I've been sorting out t-shirts in the background.
Perfect. Oh man, am I the only cool person here? How did that happen?
I don't know, man. You've got a trombone tattooed on your arm.
It's a trumpet, you tosser.
Same thing.
Okay. Anyway, thank you, Kyle, so much for giving us some time and letting us talk to you about stupid stuff that we think about, and giving us your sagely advice and your wisdom, which is really cool. Really good.
Thanks for being our first guest.
Oh yeah,
first guest.
Mm-hmm.
First guest.
That's
this is
cool.
This is first guest, second pod.
Hopefully it doesn't tank the show right out the gate.
I think it actually has set a high watermark for guests to come later, because this was a good easy conversation, but it was also like, I don't know, I feel good after having this conversation. It's good to be validated by other creatives to know that like we're not alone, and I think that that's a good message to take away.
Yeah, these are my kind of combos. Yeah, thank you guys. Had fun. See ya.